This program is brought to you by PrideNZ.com.
My name is Vaughan Shepherd. I come from quite a conservative Christian background and a very large family. I've got six siblings, so that makes us seven total, with a mum and dad. My mum's still alive. My dad passed away a few years back. But yeah, we were a very loving, supportive family. Of course, when I came out, I was a bit of a stir within my family because being gay and being Christian was, you know, not the done thing. But also, it's taken me a long time, but I'm at the point where, having been with my partner for 13 years, I'm ready to go through and have a civil union and celebrate our day and, yeah, get married finally.
Let's talk about terminology, because on the first instance you say civil union, the second time you say marriage.
Hmm.
What, to you, are the differences between the two?
Well, I don't say that I'm getting civil unionised. I say I'm getting married, and it just, to me, I think it's great that we had the civil union, and it's given us a point to sort of say, yes, let's see same-sex relationships on par with the heterosexual normative marriage. But it hasn't really quite met the balance. And I think there's a lot of Christians out there, gay Christians, who want to get married. And by all means, I know that there's a lot of Christians that don't want to see gay marriage come through because they think it's against the law or the biblical law in terms of, you know, man and woman should get married. But to those sort of people, I probably say, well, you know, when God puts two people together, who are they to, you know, keep them apart? And definitely with my own partner, I feel like, you know, we were brought together for a reason, and there's a lot of love that we have in our relationship and a lot of love we share, not just between ourselves but with our family, our friends. And yeah, it's just about having a day to sort of commemorate that, celebrate that, and sort of say thank you to our friends and family who have been there to support us throughout, you know, the roller coaster ride that it's been.
I want us to time warp back 13 years, because 13 years ago in New Zealand there weren't even civil unions, because I think civil unions came in was about 2005-ish. Yeah. So when you first got together with your partner, can you recall what you felt in terms of, well, what did a long-term relationship mean in terms of, like, the gay sense and, you know, I mean, was things like civil unions ever on the horizon?
Okay. If I'm time warping back 13 years ago, I probably have to go back 14 or 15 years ago when I first sort of came out. And my first relationship with a lovely man who we'd spent a year and a half together, but I was of the mentality that there was no sex before marriage. So having had sex with him, I automatically assumed that I must be married to this man. And we weren't a good match. There were things about the relationship that were never going to work. And although I stuck at it for that year and a half, and he was a lovely man, we just weren't compatible on many different fronts. So when we broke up, it was kind of like, well, what does that mean now that I've broken up? Because I always thought that there would be one, and that would be the rest of my life, and I would be committed to that relationship, whether I had a document or I didn't have a document. So when we parted ways, I was a little bit disillusioned with the whole kind of falling in love and having had a broken heart. I wasn't ready to get back into a relationship at all. And so when I had gone to Queers on Campus one day at university and I met this young lad called Shane, I thought, oh, he's a nice guy, and thought, maybe we'll go out one time, but also thought maybe I could look after him and sort of introduce him to the gay world, because it can be a pretty scary place out there. Ended up sort of inviting him to a play that I was in, which was called Ermelo Deuce. I was one of the actors in the play. And he was the only person from Queers on Campus. Like, I invited everyone to come to see me perform, but he was the only person that came, and he actually came twice. Now, this is a big thing, because if you know my partner, you know that he's very musical. He loves music, but he loves classical music. The musical that I was in was quite a sort of modern piece, and for him to come twice to it, you know, it was quite a big thing. So he sacrificed a lot to come and see me perform. But yeah, the rest is sort of history. We met, and I guess when we were when we were starting out, I was thinking this isn't going to last, because 2 weeks into our relationship, he told me he loved me. And at that stage, I wasn't ready to love anybody. I'd sort of gone through that whole thing and had a broken heart, and I just was like, he must be crazy. This is this is not going to happen, because, yeah, 2 weeks. But he's stuck by me, and he's shown me that, you know, through it all, that, you know, love does persevere and it does stick by you. And, yeah, he's a wonderful man. I'm very, very lucky. Mm.
Interesting. In the first relationship you had, you were thinking that, you know, sex, marriage for life,
yep.
So that's, where does that view come from?
Well, it came from a conservative Christian upbringing that, you know, you can't have sex before marriage. And so in my mind, I knew that there was no concept or nothing out there that would give a gay relationship the nuptials to sort of say, yes, you're married now. And so it was just in my mind that I'd gone through the process that if, you know, it was a belief system, a faulty belief system in some respects, that as soon as I had sex, then that was the one, and it was going to be with someone special. And he was special, and it was lovely. But I guess as I matured, both in the relationship and outside of that relationship, looking back, I know that we should have only ever been friends, and it wasn't a relationship that was ever going to be long term. There were just things that didn't quite mesh. And in the relationship that I have with my partner, Shane, we're two whole people. And I always felt in that first relationship that he was always expecting me to fill a void in his life. And I think it's really important that people need to first work on themselves and have love for themselves and not be looking to the other person to fill that void or that space in their life. I mean, it makes such a difference, because it means that people aren't jealous or worried about, you know, what the person's doing and who they're with, because they know that they love and respect that person and they're going to do the right thing by them. So, yeah.
When civil unions came into the picture, what kind of impact did it have on you and also your relationship?
If I want a time warp again, I'm thinking of when the whole homosexual debate came up way back when, and that first law passed. And I remember watching TV, and I watched these gay men walk down the streets, and I was sitting there quietly, even though I didn't want to be gay, and I was so homophobic as a young person growing up, really low self-esteem. Part of me inside was like, yay, 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 yay. And then I remember my mum walking in and saying, oh, isn't it just awful? Are these awful homosexuals? Oh, I can't believe that they put this law through. And, of course, that was my mum way back then. She's so done a whole 180 degrees, and she's so supportive and loving of our relationship that I have with my partner now. But when the civil union bill came through, it was sort of that same feeling, that little boy inside of me going, yeah, 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 yeah. So, yeah, I was really stoked about that. But at the same time, there was a level of sadness in it as well. It was like, yes, we're almost good enough, but not quite. And having struggled with that low self-esteem for so long, it's sort of like giving someone a carrot, you know, the donkey the carrot, but never quite giving them the whole carrot. And so you kind of feel happy, but then, you know, it's like an Indian giver, where they take the gift back, and it's not really going to meet that whole self, yes, you're worthy, you're a person who should be valued in society. It was a nice token gesture, but it didn't quite measure up to what I would like to think is equality.
One of the things with that civil union campaign was that there was a very strong anti-movement through things like Destiny Church.
Mm.
What did that kind of negative coverage, especially in the media, the media weren't necessarily being negative, but I mean, the messages coming from Destiny Church were very negative. What did that kind of do to you?
Well, the interesting thing is, I think a lot of people are naive about a lot of the messages that come out of Destiny Church. And as a prime example, when Destiny Church wanted to march down Queen Street for certain things, my mum was like, oh, wow, there's this really great Christian movement that's on, and they're wanting to get support from other Christian people to march down Queen Street on family values and everything that my mum believes in. And she was this close to walking down Queen Street with Destiny Church. And I was like, but mum, you realise that these people are completely anti-gay, and that's the message that they're sending. Are you sure that that's the message you want to be sending out to the rest of New Zealand? Because, you know, that would hurt me, that would affect me. And she was like, oh, I didn't realise that. I thought it was just, you know, that we were marching for family values, and, you know, and I'm all supportive of family values, and I come from a large family, and I'm embracing my family every day. I've got my sister and brother-in-law, and their two kids staying in our house at the moment, and I love it. I love it. I love being part of a large family. So, yes, there are some Christian people, some very conservative Christian people, that seem to deny what Christ was all about, which was about a new start and about sort of embracing one another and putting everything behind us and embracing one another in love. And I think that's the strongest message that Jesus had to give to us, was to love one another as he has loved us. And they forget that, and they concentrate on prejudice and pride, deceit, and they're all the things that are evil in the world. Because I read my Bible and I know my Bible, but there are fruits of the Spirit and people out there that are campaigning against liberals with conservative ideas. When you listen to them and you listen to their fruits, they're not talking love, they're talking hate, and it's a propaganda. And so, yeah, just be aware of that, and you can see by their fruits what they're peddling, and don't be part of it.
Did she march?
No, definitely not. She definitely came around to the whole kind of, oh, well, actually, I don't support that at all. So, yeah.
Was that a big shift for her? Because, as you say, like, I mean, during homosexual law reform in the 80s, if she's going, oh, these are really not very nice people, to suddenly be turning the other way.
It was a huge shift for her. But the strangest thing is, to me, my mother has always embodied what God should be about. And when I came out to her, it didn't matter that I was gay. You know, a mother's love is unconditional, and I think that's what God's love is all about, this unconditional love. And it was such a weight off my shoulders, like I'd spent the first 21 years of my life going, I'm going to be disowned by my parents when I come out to them because of my Christian upbringing, that there's just no way that they're going to accept me. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to be the lone sheep in the family, and I'll never have contact with any of my siblings or anything like that. So there was this huge weight on my shoulders that it'd be just easier to end it all and not to live, because I either lose my family or I become a sinner and I'll lose everything anyway. So, yeah, stupid thoughts went through my mind when I was a teenager, really, you know, in a bad space, in a black place, you kind of contemplate suicide. And I'd encourage any young teenagers who might be listening to this, life gets so much better, you know, just give it time. And tomorrow's another day. Look at the small things, embrace the small things, go out for a walk if you're feeling depressed, because, you know, there's a future for you out there. There's a rainbow future, and it's so much brighter, and the rain will clear and the sun will come out, and you'll just feel so much happier at the end of the day. So just hold on to tomorrow. Mm.
Can you recall your own thoughts when things like the Destiny Church march through Wellington with that kind of Enough is Enough campaign? Do you remember seeing that on the news and what impact that had on you?
Yeah, I do. I'd probably say to my partner quite often, you know, I'm not really a politically minded person. I don't care about politics. What I do care about are people, and I care about people's hearts. And my profession is in architecture, but my passion is in the architecture of the heart more so. So when I see people marching, I think, you know, for a cause, I think maybe some of their cause is valid and they're marching for good reasons, but maybe they've taken it to a point where they're not understanding the bigger picture. They're not understanding the people that they're marching against. And there needs to be a dialogue which is opened up where they sit down and actually understand what are the big issues in life and what does it mean to be marching against gays and lesbians because, you know, you have a belief system in a certain way. You know, what will it take to convince you that there's a bigger picture out there and they need to forget about fighting a fight and start loving one another. And all of that would change, but it makes me upset. And I see, sometimes I'll watch movies and I'll get to the end of a movie and I'll just be bawling, and you know, it just really upsets me. And when I see violence on TV, it really upsets me. And yet, you know, I think maybe Destiny Church, if we're talking about Destiny Church, there are really positive things that have come out of Destiny Church, where, you know, a lot of these men from South Auckland who come from, you know, quite angry backgrounds, or haven't been able to control their anger, and they maybe have a relationship which has been abusive, they're learning to control that anger and they're learning to channel it into more positive ways. So sometimes, you know, having someone at the top who's a bit of a military dictator can actually steer those people in a really positive direction. And so I think when, you know, lives have been changed because of that, I think that's a really positive thing. But I think those men have to stand up and realise, well, that didn't come from Brian Tamaki, that came from themselves and the God within them. And, you know, the Māori sort of tradition about holding the staff, the taiho, inside of you, I think that came from one of the movies, which is a really strong metaphor. I think that's really important that those men, if they're wanting to be strong Christian men, need to hold that male strength, which can quite often lash out and hurt someone inside and be pillars of their community. But they don't need Brian Tamaki to do that. They just need a belief in themselves and a love for themselves. And yeah, it was really interesting. I was having this conversation with my brother-in-law the other evening, and we were discussing how when they were growing up, there wasn't a lot of affection in their home, and their fathers didn't hug them. They weren't told that they were loved by their parents. You know, it didn't happen. And it was just a really interesting sort of snapshot, because, you know, one of my friends had come from sort of quite a broken home, but he didn't have those kind of role models that could be affectionate with him to sort of show him how he should be a father to his own children. And yet he's a wonderful father to his little 2-year-old girl nowadays, and you know, there's just so much love in that relationship, and they're very affectionate with their baby girl, and I just love it. But they've had no role models to show them the way. You know, they've just had to learn as they go along. And yeah, so I think it's important that men sort of embrace not only their masculine side, if you call it that, but that more softer side. And maybe gay men have a means of sort of helping them reach that equilibrium, because we both sort of understand what it means to be in touch with the feminine side as well as that masculine. And you know, if they could break down those barriers and just let us sort of educate them a little bit, we could help them and create a bit of dialogue between both the female and male sexes, because sometimes they break down and we understand both sides, which is kind of a bit funny.
Civil unions came in. Did you and your partner talk at the time about what that actually meant for your partnership? And also, did you and your family talk about civil unions at the time?
Right. Well, the interesting thing is my partner had sort of said, look, well, 2 weeks into our relationship, he said, I love you. It probably took me a little bit longer to say I love you back, but we'd kind of got to the position after probably 7 years that we felt like we were a married couple already. I mean, we fought like a married couple, and usually about the most banal things. It was usually things like who would turn off the light at night. It's like, your turn to turn off the light. No, it's your turn to turn off the light. Stupid things like that. But you know, just bickering. It's like, I think for heterosexual couples, they think gay couples must be totally different to them, and, you know, there must be no kind of antics in the bedroom or just silly things that go on. And yet, you know, we do bicker and we do fight about silly little things, but on the most part, we're very happy in our relationship. So civil unions didn't really change anything for us. We didn't decide, hey, as soon as the civil union bill came through, that's for us, let's do it. I probably did have a conversation with Shane, and I said, you know, what do you think? Would you think about wanting to have a civil union? And his response was like, well, why would we? Why should we? We're already, you know, a married couple. Why do we need a piece of paper to say how we feel? Because we know how we feel. And I think there's a lot of gay and lesbian people out there today that are like, well, why should we? Sometimes I think that's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. It's sort of like, well, we've been so kind of kept under the thumb about, and we've been oppressed, and we've kind of taken on this internalized homophobia that we're not good enough, we don't measure up, it's not equal, our relationships with the heterosexual relationships, that this knee-jerk reaction, it doesn't do us a service. And at that point in time, I probably was still living in that kind of internalized homophobia where, you know, okay, well, it doesn't measure up, and I don't feel proud enough to say, I want to marry this guy, and I want to walk down the aisle, and I want to celebrate it. So I didn't fight for it back then. It took a bit of shift in my way of thinking to get to that point.
You mentioned just before about saying, I love you, and he said it within 2 weeks, and it took you longer. What does that mean to you? What do those words mean to you?
I knew this interview today would cover a sort of area which was probably going to be part of the vows and possibly things that I want to say on the wedding day. But I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to my upbringing as well. And I just think of 1 Corinthians 13, where it talks about love is patient, love is kind, love never envies, it never boasts, it always perseveres. And those things, as a measuring yardstick to our relationship, I know that there's love in this relationship because it has proven the test of time, 13 years, and we're still together 14 years this July. So those words, they do mean something to me. I love people easily, and love a lot of people, but the love that you have for a partner, it's special and it's different. And those weren't words that rolled off my tongue to begin with, because, you know, I'd already done it once, and I already had the broken heart, and I didn't want to make that same mistake twice. So, like a stew pot or something, I think our relationship wasn't that kind of crazy mad love, you fall in love just overnight, bang, like that, which I'd probably describe as lobster into a boiling vat of hot water kind of thing. This was the kind of love which was, you know, a complex stew that just slowly over time developed, and the aromas came out, and yeah, I think so many people say that they've fallen in love, but they haven't really experienced love until they get to year 7 or year 8, and they work past those first sort of niggling pains of, you know, is this the one, or isn't this the one? And then you kind of realize that it's not so much the big things, but it's sometimes the small things that really make a relationship. It's the affection that you share with one another. It's how, do you know about the 5 love languages? There's a book written out there, which is a wonderful book, which talks about the 5 love languages. And sometimes people are, you know, verbally, they say, I love you. Some people express it through their actions. Some people do it through gifts. Some people do it through, anyway, there's 2 more, but everyone's got a different sort of, you know, proportion of, you know, what's important to them. And for me, I think it's always been, you know, I don't care about gifts, but it's always been about the verbal. It's been about the kinesthetic love. And what's the other one? Kinesthetic love, the verbal, and the actions. Actions were really important to me. And, you know, my partner's always shown me love through his actions, and it's always been small things, but they've always meant a lot. You know, it's just sort of, you're standing in the kitchen, and the next thing he comes up and he wraps his arms around you and he just says, you know, snuggles up to you and he says, I love you, you know. And to me, that just makes my day. It just makes me feel full of beans. You know, I might have had a tough day at work, but that just wipes the slate clean and I'm ready for the next day, or, you know.
Speaking of displays of affection, what about public displays of affection, like holding hands in public or kissing, or how do you guys go for that?
I think it really depends on the place that you're in. Like, in Sydney, down Oxford Street, it wouldn't be a problem. You could probably kiss someone in a cafe or anywhere, and it would be perfectly fine. But me and my partner, we're probably quite conservative on that front, especially in New Zealand. It doesn't seem to have the same vibe that Oxford Street in Sydney does. But even outside of Oxford Street in Sydney, you probably wouldn't be affectionate with someone else out on Wallaroo or something. It's just not the done thing. So I wish that there weren't the taboos around public displays of affection for gay people. I wish we could walk down the road, and quite often I see lesbian couples walking hand in hand and I think, wow, that's awesome, and they can be affectionate with one another. But there seems to be this other shift that happens when two men are holding hands or being affectionate with one another. I don't know what it is, but, you know, I think heterosexual males are quite happy for two lesbians to make out. It seems to be a bit of a turn on for them, but as soon as they see two men making out or, you know, being affectionate with one another, suddenly they want to, you know, bash their heads in, which isn't such a nice thing. So public displays of affection, no. Would I love to be able to hold my partner's hand and walk down the road with him doing that? Yes, and I probably have done down a deserted beach, or definitely around my family and friends. You know, I'm not bothered about just being me in a friendly environment, but when you're out in public where you just don't know the people, then not so much.
Mm. In those early years of civil unions, did your family, I know that this is a gross generalisation for mothers, but ask you, you know, are you getting married, or, you know, are you thinking about it, or were they kind of pushing you in that direction?
No, not at all. I think by that stage, Shane had been embraced into the family as my partner, and that was just a given, and there wasn't any kind of, oh, you've got to get married now to make this okay. I think everyone, my siblings, you know, the ones that had struggled with it, had come around to the idea that, you know, this was it for life. Shane was a lovely man, and they weren't questioning it. So no, there was no kind of push to go and get civil unionised, because I don't think they even knew what it meant. But, you know, as soon as this marriage amendment bill came up, which is interesting because I'd already decided that we were going to do the civil union, my mum was like, you will get married, won't you, you know, when it does happen. I was like, yeah, I'll be the first one down the aisle, you know. It was so happen, but timing hasn't quite worked out as I would have, might have hoped, but that's okay.
So flashing forward now to kind of where we are now in the last couple of years, last year we had the marriage equality bill put up by Lewis Awall, still going through Parliament at this stage.
Mm.
But you were saying that you were thinking about a civil union before that. What prompted you into that decision?
When I got back from overseas about maybe 7 years ago, I decided that that's what I wanted to do, that I wanted to get married to my partner, that I was sick of waiting. It was time. And I'd gone down to his parents' place to ask if I could have their son's hand in marriage, you know, do the whole sort of, traditional thing. It didn't make him the woman in the relationship at all, but I'd gone down for a ski weekend. That was the reason for going down, but really I just wanted to sort of scope them out and sort of say, hey, what do you think? If we were to have a civil union, would that be okay with you? I didn't call it a civil union. I said, I love your son very much and I want to get married to him. I actually said, the Catholic, I said, I don't give a rat's ass what the Pope thinks, but it was probably the completely wrong thing to say to a Catholic set of parents, and I was quite embarrassed afterwards. I sort of shot out of the home and went back up to Auckland, but I had this little magical moment down a stretch of road called, what is it, the Tussock Road? The Desert Road. And sometimes it snows on the Desert Road, but at that time it wasn't snowing, and I'd pulled over into this little rest area, and I turned on the radio, and the next thing was playing Snow Patrol's Chasing Cars song, which was my favourite song at the time, and I turned it up, and of course the band being Snow Patrol, you know, and then it starts snowing. It was just a magical moment, and I just got out of the car and I danced around the vehicle because I'd, you know, asked Shane's parents for his hand in marriage, and I was just elated, and I just felt like I was dancing with the angels, and it just was a very happy moment in my life. And then I came back up to Auckland and reality hit, and you know, I did a proposal to Shane, and it was kind of accepted but not really accepted because he didn't really want to get married. And I was kind of really upset about that whole sort of, I was in such a good place internally that I wanted to celebrate our love and to, you know, shout it from the rooftops, and he wasn't in that place yet. He wasn't able to say, yeah, that's a great thing. Let's sort of say thank you to our family and friends and have a wonderful day together and just celebrate our love. So he was kind of thinking, Vaughn's just being stupid. He's just playing silly buggers with me, and you know, my whole proposal getting on he was completely sort of shot through the mud. And you know, I'd brought him a couple of rings while I'd been in England at Stonehenge, and of course they weren't gold, and they weren't, you know, they weren't the caliber that he'd be expecting for a wedding proposal or something like that. So yeah, there was a whole lot of things that weren't quite right with that first proposal. So I felt a little bit jilted. Ended up going to St. Matthew's in the city and talking to one of the clergy there about how I was ready to leave Shane. I was ready to go down to Wellington. The relationship was over, and I was just so upset. And he just sort of counselled me and sort of said, oh, well, you know, is there anything wrong with your relationship? And I was like, no, not really. So why do you want to leave this guy? I was like, well, he's just, we're so different, and you know, I've just proposed to him and he doesn't even want to get married. And yeah, I was a bit of a bridezilla back then. I think I sort of pulled my head in a bit more. But well, it's all good, and sort of I think it's been a process, and from that 7 years ago, this whole last little 7 years, I've slowly been twisting his arm, and he's been slowly coming around to the idea of having a civil union or marriage celebration, and that's what we're doing. We're having a wedding, and we're going to have a wonderful time. But what got us here was that the little brother was getting married, and my siblings overseas were going to be flying in from Los Angeles and London, and you know, large family, six siblings. And I thought, well, if the little brother's going to get married, I'm going to get married either before him or just soon after. And so I asked him, what do you think? And at that stage, I was still kind of belittling the love that I share with my partner in comparison to what my younger brother has with his fiance, being a heterosexual relationship. And I was sort of saying to him, look, you know, do you mind if we just have something small, you know, before your wedding? You know, how would you feel about that? And he was like, no, that's fine, you know, just do it a week before. And then it would probably took another 3 or 4 or 5 months to make me realize why was I making my wedding not as important as his wedding? And it wasn't because he was saying that I should be doing that. It was because I was making it that way. It was because Shane maybe didn't want a big wedding like I did. He wanted a small wedding. But even with a small wedding, you can still have an intimate and a very personal wedding, which can be wonderful. So there was a part of me that was still, I remember a conversation with her girlfriend way back when she was first telling me that she'd got engaged, and I just met Shane, my long-term relationship, and I was really happy at that time too. But instead of telling her and sort of coming telling her about my relationship with Shane, it was all about her and her relationship with her partner and celebrating the fact that she, you know, just got engaged and stuff like that. And so my relationship has always taken a bit of a back burner when it comes to talking with other heterosexual couples. I've never kind of celebrated my relationship and sort of said, well, wait a minute, actually, it does mean something and it does have value. So, yeah, I think I've got to the point now where I'm ready to shout from the rooftops once again and sort of say, hey, we're getting married and I'm really proud of it, and, yeah, just in a really good space.
And how's the reaction been from friends and family?
It's been really positive. They're just so looking forward to the day, and it doesn't matter who you speak to within the family. They're just like, hey, good on you, and I can't believe it's taken you this long. You know, they would have been there with us well before the Civil Union Bill, walking down the aisle with us, sort of saying, yay, that's really cool. So I think sometimes governments and politicians sort of take a little while to catch up with what's sort of happening out in the community already. And definitely maybe, I don't know, 8 years, 9 years ago, I definitely had the support of my immediate family and our friends and family, our community around us, sort of saying, yep, we'll be there for you. Which is really interesting, because I was talking to someone of our church, Auckland Community Church, not so long ago, and he mentioned how, you know, they've been having ceremonies for gay couples throughout the years, well before civil unions. Like, this is not a new thing. They've been doing commitment ceremonies for a long, long time, and quite often if they're gay Christian couples, lesbian Christian couples, you know, it's been a marriage that's been done. You know, there may not be any paperwork associated with it, but it's still been a marriage in their eyes, in their hearts, in their minds.
For you, what is the most significant thing about a marriage? I'm thinking, you know, is it the day that you're kind of putting it out there in public that, yes, we are a committed couple? Or is it a longer-term thing? What for you is, I mean, what does marriage mean to you, I guess, is the question.
It's a good question. I think probably most men have always got their little blinkers on, and they're always looking out left or right, you know. Well, if it's a heterosexual male, he's always thinking, oh, she looks okay. Oh, yeah, I like her legs, and I wonder what she'd be like in bed. And sometimes they're thinking, oh, maybe I'd like to marry her, or maybe I'd like to marry her. But as soon as you sort of stop looking for someone else to tick all the boxes, and you just focus on your relationship that you have at the moment, and realize that that's the one, and it doesn't matter whether you're going through good times or bad times, you're going to stick with that relationship, you're going to make it work, that's sort of when marriage becomes real. And I think for me, I was probably in Hyde Park in England, and I'd kind of gone, this was when I was overseas, I'd gone through this whole sort of internalized sort of, you know, is Shane the one? Do I want to marry him? Maybe I just want to stay overseas and let him return home, because he'd already returned home. And, you know, do I love him, you know, enough to spend the rest of my life with him? And when you realize that your partner is not perfect, they're not going to tick all your boxes. You know, yes, he could be taller, he could be broader, he could be, you know, a classical ballet dancer or something like that, and that would be wonderful. Or, you know, a rock and roll musician, that would be great, because then I could sing in the band, and all of those things. And you realize that, okay, yeah, there's some wonderful aspects about that partner that you're already attracted to, and there's some things that almost like Jekyll and Hyde. And it was kind of funny being in Hyde Park, sort of getting to this kind of, this is an epiphany. Do you love Mr. Jekyll just as much as you love Mr. Hyde? And you kind of get to that point where you go, yeah, I do. You know, I can take the good and I can take the bad. And the person, you know, mankind is both these good and these bad aspects. And when you embrace people like that, if you can embrace your partner and sort of say, hey, you know, I know that you probably got issues in here, and I don't like the way you always leave the toilet seat up, or and you just can work through that and realize that they're not so big issues after all. You know, it's what connects you heart and heart, soul and soul. That's what's important.
Planning the big day, and I'm wondering, how is New Zealand set up currently for kind of same-sex celebrations? How have you guys found it?
I've been very aware of the fact that, you know, if I approach people, I want them to know that this is for a civil union at this stage. And if I was getting married, I'd be telling people this is for a gay couple, so that people don't kind of balk at the idea, oh, wait a minute, so we're making a cake for a gay couple? We've never done that before. Do we believe in this? Do we want to do this? So, you know, I've been okay with the idea that, you know, some people won't want to be part of that celebration, and that's their discrimination, and I don't like that, but I'm not going to let it bother me. Probably because the whole ceremony has been sort of left up to me. I feel like I've been the bride. Jane's been like, it's all yours, you look after it. I've been on Google and just sort of, you know, looked at, you know, it's always been gay wedding venues and gay something or other this, and sort of seen what Google would feed back to me. And you know, obviously places who have had a gay couple get married there before have come back with hits, and you kind of go, okay, well, you know, at the moment we've got our venue sorted. It's Grace Hill Vineyards, and they've had same-sex marriages, civil unions there before, and so that ticked all the boxes. I met the guy, seemed lovely. They were very open to us celebrating our day there. No big issue. He kept on calling it a marriage. He wasn't calling it a civil union, which I absolutely loved. And not that he was gay at all. You know, like, he was married to a lovely lady. And I just realised, oh, this is really cool. You know, there's a lot of New Zealanders out there that don't see it as an issue anymore. It's just sort of, you know, hey, it's your day, and they just want to be there and make it as special for us as possible, which is lovely. So it's nice to have, you know, Joe Bloggs, who you may think might have had some conservative bent and not be supportive of you sort of saying, nah, that's cool. You know, you want to celebrate that day, then you have it. And that's kind of, yeah, the way it's been. So I've been busy racing around, trying to think of everything and do everything, and then I'll talk to my sisters and they'll go, now have you thought of a hairdresser? And I'm thinking, oh my god, no, should I have thought of a hairdresser? It's like, yes, you've got the bridesmaids, you've got the flower girls, and I'm like, oh, boys will never think of these things. So, you know, I feel like maybe if I'd been born that woman, I would have had more insight into terms of, you know, making sure I had the hairdressers sorted out and the vehicle sorted out, which have all been sort of left to the last minute. But I think I've got the main things, you know, sorted out, the venue and everyone that's going to be in the bridal party and the speeches and those sort of things. But, it's been fun organising. I've really loved it. And for the most part, I haven't come across anyone who's been really kind of anti the fact that this is a gay celebration. So.
As the day draws nearer, and is it about 21 days out?
It's about that.
It's about 21 days, yeah.
Scary. Heart's pumping.
Are you finding that your families are getting more stressed in terms of, oh, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, or why haven't you done this?
No, not at all. I think it's probably interesting at the moment because I've got a sister staying with us, and so I've got a full house. I've got a little 2-year-old nephew and an 8-year-old niece who are running about the house, and we've got friends coming over from Germany staying with us, which is, you know, going to mean that I've got an even fuller house, which is going to be crazy, but I'll love it. Don't know about Shane. He does like his sort of peace and quiet. We're quite different in that kind of aspect, but, you know, it is just for 2 weeks. So if anyone's getting stressed out, maybe it will be Shane, but I'll be there to support him.
So tell me about the day. How are you planning? What are you planning?
What are we planning? So the day is going to start probably with bridesmaids getting their hair made up at 10 a.m. and the little flower girls getting their hair made up. We will have already sorted out all the suits, so it'll be just a matter of us men getting dressed. And we're then going to make our way probably my little younger sister's a photographer, so I don't know what's going to happen between probably the hours of 11 through to 4, but there's going to have to be lunch there, and I'll be feeding a lot of people, so it could be pizza, I don't know. I haven't thought this one through. But we'll be getting from our house, which is in Blockhouse Bay, through to Grace Hill, which is in Kumeu. Hopefully by some nice vehicles. We've got a gay couple. It was really funny. We had this gay couple move into us next door and was like, we're not the only gays in the village. And one of the guys next door owns or works for a big car agency, so I'm hoping we can hire a couple of vehicles from him. And they can take us to the wedding venue. So I hadn't thought about the cars. That was so not on my radar. I was thinking we'd just go in my little Volkswagen Polo or whatever. And it's like, no, you can't put the bridesmaids with their dresses and those kind of cars. I was getting this feedback from my sisters and my mum. And it's like, oh, really? You can't? No. So I have to think about that a little bit more. But my sister's a photographer. She's a professional photographer. So check out Jani Photography. Awesome photographer. Does baby photography. And she's also getting into weddings. She's done a lot of weddings recently. She'll probably be taking us down to the beaches. We've got some local beaches where she'll want to take some photographs. But, yeah, should be fun. And then we arrive at the venue, probably fairly much bang on 4 o'clock, and we're hoping to start the ceremony from then. It will finish maybe 4:45, and then it's just people will have drinks and it'll be a bit of a celebration. My sisters will be singing, two of my sisters who have beautiful voices, singing during the signing of the register, which today I just found out. I thought the celebrant would be bringing, who's also a minister. He's a wonderful man from St. Matthew's in the city. I thought he would be bringing the paperwork. And my brother, who's getting married as well, his you know, fiancé's already thought of this and already got their paperwork all sorted. They're like, why do you don't have your paperwork for the day? Yeah, you got to go and sort that out, brother. I'm like, oh, really? I was just leaving that up to the celebrant. I thought he'd look after that, the minister, but obviously not. So I've got a busy couple of days to sort that one out. The rest of the afternoon will probably be just photographs and photographing everyone that's there. It's an intimate ceremony, so there's basically only 40 people there, our closest friends and family, and that's what Shane had sort of given me as a brief. You know, I wanted to invite everybody and sundry, but that wasn't his idea of, you know, a nice wedding. So, yeah, we had quite different ideas, so I had to compromise on some things.
And you mentioned vows a bit earlier on. You're doing your own vows?
Well, I had written my own vows, but then I realised what I'd written as my vows were actually better as a speech after the ceremony. And I don't know whether the clergy, I hope he doesn't mind me using his name, Clay Nelson of St. Matthew's, he already had a format sort of underway and some possible vows. You know, I'd given him my list of what I thought could be airy fairy vows, and Shane vetoed all of my vows and went for his vows. He said, let's just do those, those are straightforward. I can remember those. So we won't be doing our own vows, but I'll definitely do a speech at the reception, cover off the things I would have liked to have said in my vows.
And you mentioned about having photographs taken on beaches and stuff like that. What do you think that is going to be like? You said earlier about not holding hands in public and stuff. Suddenly to be out in public spaces where you're, you know, this is your man. This is.
I guess I'll probably be surrounded by family and friends that it won't bother me too much. But probably the beaches that we go to won't be very public beaches anyway. They'll be beaches close by where we'll probably be the only ones on the beach anyway, which is maybe a little bit sad. It'd be great to be able to go to Piha or Mirawai, one of these main beaches, and just, you know, go, hey, here we are, and who cares, who gives a shit. And it'd be really nice to have the public sort of supporting us and maybe clapping us and sort of saying, hey, that's great, you know, look at the gay couple down there getting married, and getting some really positive feedback. Sometimes we don't give our public enough kudos, and a lot of them, the majority of them, will be behind us, and it's a small minority who can, you know, really, you know, tear your heart apart, or do worse, can do physical damage towards you that really spoil it for the rest of them, because, you know, there's a lot of people that would be okay with seeing two men down on a beach getting photographed on their special day. It wouldn't bother them at all.
Certainly there was a fantastic reception to the two guys in the car on the Pride Parade just recently. I don't know if you saw that with the marriage equality.
Right.
As they came down the street, they, you know, and they were kissing, and the crowd just went off. It was fantastic.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, we were part of that parade, Auckland Community Church, and a lot of the gay-friendly churches as well. It was sort of under this umbrella of Auckland Rainbow Churches, which was really cool. So we had the Methodist Pitt Street Church, who else? St. Matthew's in the City, and, you know, a number of others, which was really cool. And we had a really positive reception from the crowd. And I think a lot of people who may not have been sitting on the fence about walking in this parade, especially, you know, a lot of gay Christians seem to be quite conservative, which I think is quite a bit of a laugh, because I would have thought that gay Christians were the most liberal people out there, but they're quite conservative with how they are, not only with their philosophy, but being in public, and they're not necessarily, they may be proud about who they are, but they're not wanting to flaunt it. And so for some of them, walking down that street and getting such a warm reception was huge for them. It was like, wow, I just didn't think it could be like this. And it was just so wonderful to be able to, you know, put the thumbs up and get people smiling back at you and giving you the thumbs up, and yeah, just lots of smiles and a warm reception. It was wonderful, very affirming. Lots of pride, gay pride.
Your wedding, does it have a theme?
I've six siblings, and so it has a gay rainbow theme. So I've kind of asked all my siblings, maybe there's Bridezilla coming out of me, but you've all got to wear your colours. So the eldest has got to wear her indigo, the second eldest is wearing her violet. Next eldest, I don't know whether she's going to make it to the wedding or not, should be wearing blue. Then we've got my younger sister who's wearing yellow. I'm going to be wearing green, which is the middle colour of the rainbow. And my little brother wearing orange, and my younger sister, who looks awesome in red, will be wearing a beautiful red skirt, dress. Yeah. So we're going to be the rainbow family on the day, and I've asked everyone else if they could wear black and white with maybe a feature rainbow colour as well. So hopefully when we get photographed, we'll get this beautiful rainbow effect going on. But, you know, that's a little bit of me, but I don't know, people could turn up in beige and who knows, that'll be okay. I'm not that much of a Hitler when it comes when it comes to the organisation. What happens, happens.
The marriage equality bill is going through Parliament at the moment. If that passes and there is marriage equality in New Zealand, is that something that you guys would go for? Would you change your civil union for a marriage?
I think so. I mean, to me, it would be really important, and I'd want to do that straight away. I might have to twist Shane's arm again. I'm not sure what that process will be like. Well, I've already done the civil union. I don't want to do the whole marriage thing again. But I've always wanted to get married in a church, so this is happening at Grace Hill, which is wonderful. I feel like Jack and Jill have gone up a hill, and that's really cool. But you know, I'd really like to do the church service, and if I could twist his arm and just doing something small but intimate in a church, St. Matthew's in the City, because I know that they will be supportive there, and we've got clergy there that will marry us. Clay would have married us if the law had gone through, but yeah, he's also a celebrant, so he can do the civil union. And yeah,
have you investigated what happens to the civil union once marriage comes in? I mean, can you almost swap certificates, or do you have to kind of get kind of divorced as a civil union and then remarried as a...
This I don't know. I thought it would probably be quite straightforward that you just swap one certificate for the other certificate. I don't know whether it would bother too many people. I think a lot of people who may not come from a Christian background, who have, you know, heterosexual couples who have opted for civil unions, will continue to have civil unions because they don't want the church involved in their particular union. And I think that's fine, that's great. But for those people that would like to say, I'm married instead of civil unionised, maybe swapping paperwork will be an important aspect for them. I think for me it will be an important aspect to sort of celebrate, hey, you know, we've finally reached equality and yay for gay pride, because that's awesome, that's the final stepping stone. I think it will take a while for people to 100% come behind it and for it to be normalised, and it will take probably many, many more years, but you know, if the majority are behind it, supporting it, then that's a huge, huge stepping stone on the way. And hopefully young teenagers won't be growing up going, I'm feeling so depressed and I'm feeling suicidal because I'm gay and there's no hope for me, there's no future for me because I can't get married and I can't, you know, I can't have a wonderful relationship with a man because no gay couples are ever happy. Hopefully they'll have role models out there. They'll know people in the community, their uncles who might be a gay married couple, and will be more visible, so people will know that, you know, it's not a choice, it is the way we're born, and we can just be part of the community. We are your doctors, we are your nurses, we are your architects, we are your psychiatrists, your builders, your drain layers, we're everywhere, and we're also your brothers and your sisters. Sometimes even your parents. And yeah, just love us, support us, and know that, you know, we love and support you back.
Before we started recording, you told me a very sweet story as a teenager. I'm wondering, would you like to tell me that again? Because sure. I just think it's so sweet.
I'd fallen in love with my best friend when I was in sixth form, and everything about this guy just was wonderful. And at the same time, you know, he was my best mate and I didn't want to be falling in love with him because I didn't want to be gay, and that was the last thing I ever wanted to be because I was a good Christian boy. So I had this internal dilemma where I was falling in love with my best mate, and he would say things to me sometimes, like we would share things, and I remember this one time where he said to me, you know, if you weren't a girl, you'd be my perfect match. And I was just inside, I was breaking apart going, oh crap, why should it matter? Because, you know, I already thought he was my perfect match. But, you know, it was puppy love, 16, never been kissed before. And then he'd once asked me, you know, what I was attracted to in a person. And I thought, well, this is a sort of strange to be asked this, but you know, I've always been attracted to people's eyes. I love people's eyes because I believe that the windows to the soul, and I think you know, when you connect with someone, when you see someone's soul, you know, that's more magical than anything in the world. And I loved his eyes. He had beautiful chocolate brown eyes. He was really stunning. And he asked me, you know, what do you think of my eyes? And I was like, oh, I didn't know what to say, you know. I wanted to tell him exactly what I thought of his eyes, but at the same time, it was like, I couldn't go there, you know. He would just completely, you know, punch me in the face, or, you know. So I was like, well, you're a bloke. And he was like, oh, so it makes a difference? And I said, well, yeah, you're a bloke. but, you know, maybe it doesn't make a difference, and maybe if we could look into one another's eyes and into one another's souls and sort of see the beauty that's there, the body would fall away and we'd be able to embrace one another as souls and as beautiful spirits. And that would be a wonderful future to strive for. So, yeah. If he's out there, he knows who I'm talking about. I don't know whether I don't know. I think he probably had a little bit of homophobia kind of growing up. There were a few things that he said, you know, but being blokes, being teenagers, you kind of get that anyway. It was sort of the stereotypical things that you say, and you make fun of your friends and you put down. And even today, you know, there's the expression like, that's so gay, and it has that negative connotation. But, you know, I always thought if I did mention it to this friend that it would just be the complete end of our friendship. But he was a blessing in disguise, which is really awesome, and I ended up writing him into Memoirs of an Undercover Angel, which is the book that I've written, Body, Mind and Soul, so check it out. But hope he doesn't mind, but he is in there, because he helped me come out, so thank you very much. You know who you are out there. But both my sister and myself had fallen in love with the same guy, and it was a crazy kind of situation, and I hadn't told anyone that I was gay or I was feeling any of these feelings, and I so wanted to be able to tell someone and express it, and I so wanted to tell him, but I didn't know how he'd react. I ended up writing this beautiful poem called The Tear, which is also in the book, which was about tearing myself away from him. And when I broke up with him, it was almost like breaking up with a girlfriend or something, but he had this tear that fell down his cheek, and I wrote this poem about that particular instance. But my sister used to come into my bedroom, and she'd say, "I'm so in love with, you know, da-da-da. He's just so dreamy," and she'd write his name all over her books. "I love da-da-da." And I'll call him Sam, okay? But Sam knows who I am, and it's not Sam. But, you know, it was, "I love Sam this, I love Sam that, I love..." And one day, I just broke down, and I cried, and I was like, "But, Johnny, why don't you realize that the way you feel about Sam..." And I couldn't finish the sentence because, you know, I'd never ever said anything to anyone about any of this. And she was trying to figure out what the rest of the sentence was. And at first she was thinking, "Oh, it must be, is the way that you feel about me?" I was like, no, not going there. No incest, no. No, the way that you feel about him is the same way I feel about him too. So, yeah. So I came out to my little sister when I was 16. That I was in love with Sam, and and she was awesome. She just was so supportive, and she just kept it a secret for many, many more years. And it wasn't until I was 21 that I was really ready to come out. I sort of denied it until that stage, but there were lots of things that happened in between 16 through to 21 that sort of really helped me along that journey to sort of finally get to the point where I was proud enough to say I am gay.